The first time my spouse and I went to a Unitarian Universalist church, we didn't go inside. There were two morning services at the church we were looking to attend. We decided, mistakenly it turned out, that the earlier service would be the better attended of the two. We sat at the far end of the parking lot, huddled below the dashboard like two inept crooks in a spy movie, casing the joint. Only 18 people, I said, as the scheduled time of the service began. I looked around at the mostly empty parking lot. That's not enough. Agreed, Lauren said. Now, we didn't have to explain to each other what we meant. In a crowd of 100, you can get lost as newcomers. In a crowd of 18, you might as well be carrying a billboard that says, new and confused. We came back the next week, smugly arriving a few minutes into the second service and leaving just as the closing instrumental began. And this became our routine. Arrive a few minutes into that well-attended service and then dash out as the first notes of the postlude were played on the piano. A beeline to the parking lot and we were out of there. Now, we liked the services, there was no doubt. We liked the messages of inclusion and challenge, struggle and hope. We discovered, to our surprise, that we liked church. We just didn't want to talk to anybody. So one Sunday, at least, I don't know, 5 or 6 Sundays into our well-established routine, we headed for the exit, our drill. Well-oiled at this point, just as we'd done the previous weeks, just as the music director began that final piece. And there, in front of the exit doors, arms outstretched, stood a woman. In fact, she's here today in the pink shirt there. Raise your hand, Clover. She's there. You know, you may know wonderful Clover and Paul. They have the tie-dyed Volkswagen in the parking lot. So if you've ever seen that out there, it matches their t-shirts. But anyway, there she was, Clover, in the doorway, arms outstretched. And I mean, look at that face. How do you can't push your way past her. Everybody wants to know who you are, she announced. So I was told not to let you get away this time. And we had to laugh, and we had to agree it was time. As this person said, as Clover said, time to get to know the community. And I realized in that moment that I had initially come to this place to find wisdom and spirituality and hadn't thought about community. Yet here it was, right in front of me, community. This idea of community is central to who we are as Unitarian Universalists. When people ask what our beliefs are, the answer could be, we believe in love in community. Not just love as feelings, but love through actions. Actions, as our 7 principles talk about. Actions that range from the way we treat the people closest to us to all those folks out in the wider world. And we know that Unitarianism and Universalism have been being shaped since the early 19th century, since before the early 19th century, since all the way back to the time of Jesus. You've had Unitarianism, many shapes and forms throughout the world, but always focused on this idea of looking at Scripture rationally, using all available human knowledge, logic, and scholarship. And that made Unitarians question things, not prone to accept irrational supernaturalism or just basic social expectations that were a given. And by the early 1800s, fancy Bostonian Unitarian types were the movers and shakers in American culture, women's suffrage movements, leaders, abolitionists, and so on. Those Unitarians believed in the essential goodness of human beings and our ability to change things for the better. And meanwhile, Universalists grew out of early Christians who rejected the concept of eternal damnation to hell. If God is a loving God, they said, wouldn't God ultimately forgive his children even if they did wicked things? So these horseback riding preachers in the 1800s set off to small towns and villages throughout the United States, spreading the word to average folks that God did indeed find them worthy of love. And little universalist churches started up in small towns everywhere, and I mean everywhere, as people clamored for the idea that even if they messed up, God loved them. And so how do these ideas trickle down today, now that these two strands were joined together in 1961, when this thing called Unitarian Universalism was formed? And I think we come back again to that idea of love in community. Because to be wise and visionary, rational and hopeful, like those early Unitarians, requires us to be in a community that offers us insight, supports us, but also holds us accountable. And to be like the early Universalists, to keep showing love, to keep actively affirming the worth and dignity of every person is hard to do if we're not in some kind of relationship with them. How do we show our love? By sitting alone in our living rooms, lushly appointed though they may be, with comfy furniture and big screen TVs. We need only look at the leadership in our political sphere to know the kind of selfishness that thrives when love in and of community is not cultivated. When my spouse and I found our way to a UU church all those years ago, no wonder we weren't looking for community. We'd been conditioned by the dominant American culture to believe that life was about our individual concerns. But keeping us apart with the myth of the empowered individual keeps us weak, for it is when we come together that we are strong. That first time at church, we found community. We found love. And now let us sing the first verse of Life Calls Us On. This is from our foremost UU composer, Jason Shelton. It's not in our hymnals yet, but we've been learning it this morning because it will be in the next edition of the hymnal that comes out at some point. But let us sing this first verse, knowing indeed that it is love that calls us on.
Here in reverence now we gather.
I came looking for hope, a disgruntled visitor to our congregation said recently. She said this to me on the phone. But people kept talking about what's happening in the world. I don't want to hear it. Sometimes people come to your church thinking they will find a prolonged spiritual experience that has no relationship to the outside world. That is not our tradition. Our tradition calls us to find hope by actively loving the world around us. And that means that we are called to do things like work for justice, even as we take that time to follow our individual spiritual paths. So we try to make room for our differences, even though there are times it can seem like we are politically located in one place. And David O. Rankin, a longtime Unitarian Universalist minister, writes amusingly about this. David says, in 1968, I delivered a sermon prior to the presidential election. It was not a partisan plea, since I was not overly impressed with either Richard Nixon or Hubert Humphrey. Instead, I merely recommended that I hoped everyone would vote for the most intelligent, experienced, and compassionate candidate. So imagine my surprise when a man confronted me in the reception line and angrily shouted, "How dare you use the pulpit to support Hubert Humphrey?" That's the thing about politics and church. We try to keep directly out of it, but the side of justice is often a clear one, even to those on the other side of it. But know that this is a place in which disagreement is welcome. And speaking of disagreement, what about God? That central figure of hope in so many religions. What do we make of God here in our midst? And of course, this will just be the last word on the subject, right? We can think about Forest Church's metaphor, the cathedral of the world that Reverend Summer spoke of. Here we sit together within a tapestry of colored light. Is that light God? Is it truth? Is it the creativity shared among us? Ask different Unitarian Universalists and you will get different answers. For me, it comes back to the notion of abiding love in community. Does this love stretch beyond this world? I don't know. The beautiful thing about Unitarian Universalism is that I don't have to know. The questions can be enough. The willingness to search, to yearn, to gaze into the night sky and see the possibilities of our existence can be enough. We might individually call ourselves atheists, agnostics, or theists, but this faith asks that we remain searchers, searchers of truth and meaning. By our willingness to search, we find hope. A few years ago, I faced a particularly difficult moment in my life. The untimely death of a friend, just 34 years old, someone I thought would be in my life until the end. In my grief, I decided to go for a walk by myself in the forest. I set out early on a Saturday morning down a trail I'd walked many times, but this time I was determined to go further down it than I'd ever gone before, to walk until somehow my troubles were left far behind. I walked and walked until time no longer existed. I came at last to a place where the trees met overhead in a perfect vaulted canopy of leaves. Between them, glimmers of sky sparkled. There was moss everywhere, electric green carpet covering the fallen log I sat on. The hum of insects was as loud and rhythmic as music. I sat, absorbed into that space, into that moment, completely belonging and connected to it. My wounded spirit went out to that space, that moment, and in my heart, lived my lost friend. Everything felt wondrous, felt possible. And this, I think now, is what it's all about. This was the presence of God, if that kind of traditional religious terminology is useful to you. Or perhaps we can call it hope, if that term works for you better. God or hope, or whatever, perhaps simply created by my imagination. But what power that imagination has. What power that no wonder there is a yearning to name it. And if it's truly something beyond me, well, how can I know? I can only know that there is something that calls me back to life over and over again. For also that day in the woods, this something called me away. Called me away from the green cathedral deep in the forest. Called me back to life, back to community. For I knew even then that it was not my destiny to stay forever alone in that stunning forest chamber. That this moment was a way of calling me back to hope. And it is this we prepare ourselves for in this space on Sunday mornings. Learning to find moments of hope that enable us to carry on beyond the death of loved ones or financial problems or marital woes or health challenges or so on. Hope can be easy to miss. It might be found in the magnificence of a forest cathedral, but it might also bubble up in the kitchen sink among the dirty dishes. In a loving community, we better learn how to recognize indicators of hope whenever and however they come. And now let us sing the next verse of Life Calls Us On, knowing indeed that it is hope that calls us on.
Words and deeds of those before us,
I remember a conversation I had with my spouse not too long before we first entered that church's doors. "I've had enough," I said. "I'm done with everyone and everything." And I meant it. News stories had undone my belief in the goodness of people. Relationships in my life had disappointed me. The inability to reconcile the faith of my childhood with modern wisdom had left me undone, without faith in much of anything. And most devastatingly, I had lost my faith in humanity itself. My spouse, seeing that I was in crisis, pressed me further. "There's no place for me," I said, searching for the words. "I might have gifts and talents, I don't know, but there's no place for them." And I truly believe that. I'm sure there are countless people out there right now who believe their potential as human beings is unwelcome in society. We live in a culture that suggests that if we lack value, if we don't fit into a certain box. And really, who does fit into that box? It can be very hard to find our way. And so to find a place like that first church we came to a place where we were encouraged to take and bring our unique identities, to build relationships, to imagine a better world, to traverse our individual spiritual paths while holding the hands of others, well, that place was an answer, even if the answer was composed of more questions. That first Sunday when we stayed to meet others, I remember a conversation we had with a member of the congregation. "Don't hesitate to share with me any questions you may have," this friendly woman said after we'd finished our conversation. As she stepped away, she paused and then added, "And feel free to share with me any answers you may have too." And so here we sit in this sanctuary, in this faith movement, knowing that we are called to love one another because that is how we cultivate our potential, how we begin answering those questions. Perhaps this long journey we Unitarian Universalists have had has all been about coming back to that idea stated by that Jewish teacher Jesus in John chapter 13, verse 34. "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so must you love one another." For it's important to recognize that this movement is not just some social club operating under a broad umbrella, but it is an actual faith historically focused on loving one another. And connecting diverse people means our faith honors questions. Questions like, what do we feel we are called to do in the world? How do we connect with our better selves? How do we begin the transformation of ourselves and the larger world for the better? In the asking of these questions, we open ourselves up to receive at least a partial answer, some ray of that colored light in that cathedral of the world. A partial answer that can encourage us to take responsive action. In the asking of these questions, we acknowledge the very center of our humanness, our curiosity, our imperfections, our understandings of the limitations of our knowledge. Here in this place, our questions are our faith. Let us sing the next verse of Life Calls Us On, knowing that it is indeed faith that calls us on.
Loyal guides in love and duty, lead us with a trust and love. Blessed are they whose inward beauty shouts a path of earth
And so here we have this faith that we share, a stained glass window of hope framed by love in community, a window that shows us the best we can be, one that asks of us not to run when we hear the closing song, but to stay, to connect, to be with others even when it's hard. And this, after all, is not just a faith movement, but a life movement. Our purpose here is not to demand people believe certain things. We don't limit the wisdom we welcome into the sanctuary. We have six sources we look to, everything from wisdom, from the world's religions, to scientific teaching. But the truth is that all wisdom is welcome here. We believe wisdom is all around, both comforting and challenging wisdom that helps us to answer that call to life's glorious mysteries. Today, I hope you will continue to ground yourself in love, that you will see hope where you can find it, that you will consider your framework for making meaning of life as a form of faith, one located within a community of others on similar searches for meaning and truth in a society that pushes us away from this quest. I hope that we will all continue to welcome in new patterns of light, that we will see the cathedral around us as lit by the multi-hued glow of all who have come before, all who will come after, and all who are now answering the challenging but joyful call of life itself.